Welcome everybody to Spawn on Me. This is episode 201. I can't believe I just said that number. That's nuts. We are chilling. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. I'm joined this week and every week with my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the man who makes cold look not cold because he is warm of heart. It is Cicero Holmes. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. The Baron of Bourbon stays warm with a glass of bourbon.
Yeah. Word, and more word. And also joining us this week and every week is my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the man who makes mini froze look good, who makes science look good, who makes math look good, who makes dope turtleneck sweaters look good. It is Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How are you, sir?
What's up, guys? Math joke. Straight off the bat, since I was doing Riemann sums with a student today, and I called him Reefmon sums, and they laughed. End of joke. I'm great.
I don't even know what to do with that. That's kind of gross.
Reefmon sums. It's so good.
No,
it's good.
I don't even know. I don't even know what to do with that. That just made me. I don't know. That hurt my soul.
In exchange for my wonderful jokes, like all of my young high school kids that I tutored, they teach me about what's cool in born in 2001 land.
That's a little scary.
That's reasonable. That's reasonable
that
as hell.
Freak me out too.
I can't front. Also joining us this week and every week is the Duchess of Diversity, the master of the Roll 20. It is Tanya DePass. How are you, Tanya? What's good?
Oh my god, I'm still laughing about that damn D&D game and how everyone was like so horrified at my choices of killing that dude anyway when he was like doing horrible shit in his dungeon.
Of course you gotta kill that dude. Why not?
Look, he had 10,000 gold. Do you know what kind of money that is in D&D land?
That needs to be redistributed at that point.
Sweet.
We have to figure out how to like spread that wealth around, and then we have to build the new nation of domination,
right?
Which is totally a WWE thing,
but anyway. Dungeons and Dragons Revolution.
Oh
yeah,
that D-R.
So we gotta get you on a game though.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We'll have like a game.
Yeah, show me around. Like you're my tour guide to all these games that I don't play. Like whatever, you just get me involved in. Oh well.
And you know, Lee, that I do have the Dragon Age tabletop game. We're gonna get you into Dragon Age.
So we are chilling this week. It has been a very good week. Shout out to everyone who watched and listened to episode 200. Thank you all for coming by and hanging out. It was great to have Evan Narcisse with us, as usual, talking about all things Wakanda, all things Black Panther. It was fantastic. And again, thank you to everyone who came through and repped for us really hard. Again, thank you to everyone also on our Patreon who's been paying attention and listening to all the content we're putting out there. And thank you to our wonderful host. Thank you to our wonderful guest that is with us this week. Oh my goodness. We are super excited to bring back to Bricago Lee Alexander.
Hi.
As she pops back in through the Skype.
Yeah,
wormhole.
No, I'm so sorry. My connection's a little weak, so there might be a delayed reaction on my end. But hi, thank you all so much for having me. It's amazing to be back here with you.
So thank you again for rocking with us and coming back. It was about.
There's no one else I would do it for at 10:30 on a Tuesday. Come on.
Don't make me cry on stream.
Thank you very much. Wow.
I mean, I knew this would be fun, so.
So it's been basically 2 years since you were last here, hanging out with us. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We were talking about some of your previous projects. We were talking about Offworld back then. We were talking about, you know, all of your writing and all the things that you were doing in that space. Now we're talking to you about the game that you basically helped to craft with your writing prowess. Reigns Her Majesty. We're excited for this because this is dropping. Most folks will hear this on Tuesday, but this is dropping on Thursday, the 7th of December. I would love to give you the stage and just let you run and talk about, you know, what's been going on with the game and talk about, you know, your involvement with it.
Okay. Oh, so I guess it's kind of a long story. The last time we spoke, I had just launched Offworld with my colleague Laura Hudson. I'd already been doing games journalism for something like 9 or 10 years by that point. And there definitely was an extent to which I felt that I had said everything that I had, you know, everything that I had to say and offer in the space had been said. I grew up in public. I went through Gamergate, you know, like I had my values that I tried to push and I encountered, you know, by that point, you know, within a year or two from the time we last spoke, I definitely feel like I had like wrapped up a lot of what I had set out to do in terms of my personal approach to dialogue around games. I'm a narrative designer, whether I want to be or not. That I dream in text inputs and in, you know, game design loops. So when they offered me the chance to be the writer on this project, I was like, all right, it's already an established system. I would be the lead writer. They're really offering me a lot of creative control. I loved the first game, and I have a clear idea of what I can add here. So I really can't say no to this, you know, regardless of the attitudes that I had. You know, I was really, you know, in a way, I'd been really harmed by games. And I was kind of, you know, I was like, I'm proud of what I did. This is all that I have left to offer. And I'm freaking sick of this space and how it treats me. But for this particular project, it really was the right people. You know, the right team, the right project, and they were really patient with me while I learned the tools, and while I learned the system. And I just, you know, I just like went wild on it. Like I just, you know, in as much as I could go wild on it while making sure that fans of the previous game would still be happy. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, I know that you mentioned that, you know, you're lead writer and narrative designer, right? And I don't think, at least me personally, I don't have a clear idea of exactly what that encompasses in a normal gaming project, especially one like the Reigns. I guess you can call it the Reigns franchise now,
right?
which is like mostly focused, you know, on like text based input and like decisions and like a swiping. So
in my, you know, career as a games writer, narrative driven and text intensive projects were always my favorite. But the fact is, the role of writer and narrative designer means a completely different thing, depending on, you know, what project you look at. For me, basically, so the Reigns system, if you've played Reigns 1, is already really well established. You know, the cards interface is there. The decisions making interface is there. The four statistical goods and how to manage your kingdom are there. The system is already established. People know it's good to tell stories with. And they want to bring in, you know, like do whatever they want within that system. So it was really, like I said, like, yeah, like obviously, so like a narrative designer is someone who creates the storytelling paths that a player does through games. But the methods by which they do that and the tools through which they execute on that are going to be different depending on the product. But I feel like I really lucked out here because a lot was already established that I could just like have fun with and riff on.
So we've all had a chance to play the game a little bit, and and it doesn't suck.
No.
In fact, it's the opposite of not sucking. So as a person,
review number one, it doesn't suck.
Right. Review number one, it doesn't suck. Put that on the
quote. I'm going to call Devolver tomorrow. On me. It doesn't suck.
Doesn't suck. Storm.
I would hate for that to be a backup box quote from us.
Right.
Wow.
So the great.
It doesn't have a box.
Right. It doesn't have a box, but you can put it on the back of the app. It's a back of the app quote. One of the cool things about Reigns as a series is it's Tinder for people who haven't used Tinder and like card games, because it, you know, uses the same type of formula. Mm-hmm. But what I've really enjoyed about Her Majesty is how you've taken that and taken something that was seemingly so simple in Reigns and upgraded the systems in a way that where like you have items and now you can actually interact with the items physically within the game, which is super, super cool. Was that something that you knew was going to happen as you were writing, or were you just kind of like separated from the developers and just focused on writing the stories?
No, so there was really, the core development was done by a team of the three of us. There was me as the writer and narrative designer. Francois Alliot is the one who created Reigns 1. This is his system, his design, his back end, his front end, his tools. And so so I don't know. I think the previous Reigns artist wasn't available. So we worked with Arnaud Debock, who is a French artist who's also a collaborator of Francois. So it was really a lot of the three of us kind of, you know, every week we would like throw ideas at each other. We'd talk about narrative design. We'd talk about how to tell the stories. And it was really important to us that we solved some of the problems that fans had with Reigns 1 and that we added some new systems. So it really was, we were all working together. Like, you know, they were definitely the systems designers, but they were kind of responding to my story prompts. And so it was definitely a collective process of, you know, we want to gate the stories in a clearer way, or we, you know, we want to add some systems to this stuff that people already love. And so they basically, they were like, we're going to have an item system. How can you make that work narratively? So yeah, it was definitely a lot of back and forth. We absolutely originated all these ideas as a team. And we were really in step with the evolution of each aspect together, which I think, again, was a really awesome opportunity that doesn't get to happen a lot in games with writers. So again, that was another area that I felt lucky that we were always, you know, working together and hypothesizing about how we could execute on this together.
Cool. Because for me, the first Reigns was just like, the game's over in like 2 minutes. What did I do? What happened?
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely like a random modular storytelling system, which means like there were definitely some whole, like I loved Reigns 1. I missed subway stations because of it. But you know, we were definitely all aware that there were some design holes you could fall through. And we did try to address that in this game to try to make a more modular, like, so that each reign the player has is different. If they want to kind of pursue goals that are suggested to them by the story, they can do that. But if they just want to live for 2,000 years being a million different crazy queens, they can do that as well.
Well, I guess for me, you know, it's a cool mobile game, and you know, it'll be on other platforms, but if you could expand this out and like do more of a, like, either, you know, I don't know how you feel about RPGs or RPG type game, or more of a full game versus mobile, would you do it? And what would you put into that? Because Reigns is such an interesting concept, but I don't know if it would actually work outside of a mobile environment.
Right. So we have Reigns is coming out on the App Store. It's coming out on Google Play. And we also have a really passionate Steam audience. It will be available on Steam as well. And it has a very low spec, simple interface. So the Steam audience will be able to enjoy it as well. Personally, because I played Reigns 1 on the iOS platform, I kind of view this as like, you know, a native phone game. But it's all about how we have a really strong audience on Steam, and we want to serve them as well. So it's all about, you know, how you want to come at it. Now, Tanya, your question is interesting, because of course, when I was given this job, the first thing that I thought was like, oh, how can we like completely change this? Like, how can we expand it? So funny thing about game development is that it's actually a process of trying to reconcile a lot of irreconcilable goods to make the best compromise possible. And the minute we tried to change something fundamental about how Reigns works, it didn't work as well. Mm. So, you know, no matter how grand ideas that I had about how I was going to come in and reskin the system or whatever, like it worked. The first one worked so well because of this, you know, really subtle and intangible series of vectors that you can't really mess with. So the number of innovations that were possible are actually quite subtle because Reigns is more complicated than it looks. The factors that go into making an exciting Reigns card are really specific. You know, in answer to your question, of course, I would like to work on different, you know, I'm already working on another game under NDA, like, you know, different systems, broader systems. Yes, absolutely. I would like to. But in this case, you know, we had something that was working super well. We wanted to evolve it without revolutionizing it. And then as a result of that, we had to, you know, we had to be very respectful to the heritage of the original original and make sure that we didn't unmoor it too much. Because again, it's like a Jenga tower. The more you pull out and start to change, the more the things that were strong about what we were used to come apart. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And before we get too much further, we got a good question from the chat as well, from our buddy Chris Algu.
Chris.
Yes. Chris wants to know, how did you keep track of all the different interactions between cards, stories, and items?
Oh, okay. So,
see what you did, Chris?
I don't know necessarily that we did. So Brains is a modular storytelling system. So from the get-go, I have to write each card so that it can appear in the context of any other cards. They have to be written in a way that no matter what order you see them in or when you find them, they all could make sense as part of the same current narrative loop. There was a lot of mental track keeping I had to do. Another thing that's a genius about Francois Alliot, who I worked with on this, he made it so I could feed the game, you know, I could feed into Unity using only an Excel spreadsheet with, you know, really fundamental code-based commands in. So, you know, I would write a card, I would determine the weight of the card, the statistical impact of the card, and more importantly, what happens when you select, you know, one response versus the other. You know, there's some things we're saying, no, we'll have consequences later, but I have to hide that from the player so that they'll be surprised. I guess I can compare it to knitting. Where you have an overall plan for the thing that you're tying together, but, you know, it might get away from you at some point. The final result might surprise you. I was creating loops and then trying to go back and reconnect those loops. I guess I didn't have an intense system for it, but luckily our tools were so straightforward that, you know, just by using this Excel spreadsheet that we had created that showed the interrelationships between all the cards, you know, I was able to, in my head, hopefully keep track of it.
Awesome. So when you're, building these cards and sort of thinking about sort of the interactions between all the cards, do you have like a bunch of data from Reigns, from the first Reigns, that says that people are more likely to select this based on this? And does that influence your development of the cards in this one, or are you guys pretty much starting from scratch?
Well, in a lot of ways, we were starting from scratch. If the team does have that, you know, kind of user testing, A/B testing type data on the original Reigns players, I didn't have access to it. No, we definitely at later points in the game had fun with the player's expectation that everything should be tracked. I mean, there's definitely a lot of nods at various points in the game. Most players who are playing a choice-based narrative story assume they're going to be watched and assume they're going to be, you know, receiving statistical results, whether or not they have any evidence to believe that's so. So I'd like to think we tried to have a little fun with that at times. I guess just spoiler alert, no, my work on the game was not at all A/B driven or data driven in that way. We were just inventing it. However, though, we did have a lot of empirical knowledge about what fans had liked about the first game. Like, you know, they liked the deaths, they liked the secrets, you know, they liked certain aspects of the humor. And, you know, I did kind of conscientiously try to reproduce or satisfy that when I was doing the writing for the new game.
So I really want to know, how was it to switch things up a little bit? And, you know, the game is called Her Majesty. So, and being able to write from this queen perspective, I wanted to know, you know, how did that kind of change the way that you looked at the narrative that you wanted to share with the audience? And also, was it more fun to be able to write from that perspective, to be able to kind of definitely dig into stuff that would be so much cooler to go with?
Right. So, you know, Reigns was very successful and a lot of people loved it. But, you know, there was questions like, why is it only a man's story? Why can't I play as a queen? Right. And I think that had a lot to do with why my team reached out to me because of, you know, some of the work that I had done in that area, you know, talking about women's experiences in games. And basically, my whole pitch coming into this project was I didn't just want to do a gender swap, you know, like I didn't just, you know, like, if you make the badass, like, muscle man in the skin tight wetsuit into a girl and nothing else changes, you know, that's not really, I guess, you know, this is a lighthearted comedy game. And I, right. you know, I don't want to overstate the, you know, impact of my activist work here. But part of my pitch for this project was, you know, I wanted to shift the locus of power. So in Reigns 1, you're the king. Everybody does exactly what you say. You're the kingdom manager. But if we just switched that figure into a woman, to me, it wouldn't have meaningfully changed the gameplay. You know, so I was like, I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. And if you watch Game of Thrones, some of the people that cause the worst stuff going on in the kingdom are not the people in power. It's how, you know, people seize power when they're told it's being taken away from them. You know, it's how do you kind of, how do you work within your limitations to manipulate your environment to create power for yourself? And I thought that would be, I thought that, you know, so in Reigns 2, you're not the queen of the whole kingdom. You're still the king's wife. And your husband is like a man baby that needs your constant attention. Wow. You know, the church has constant expectations as concerns what kind of woman you'll be. You know, the people want to see you be a glamorous, extravagant celebrity. The archbishop wants to see you like a constructive religious figurehead. So you, because Reigns is about balancing all these statistical goods through choices, I thought this could be a really cool environment to be like, okay, what if you're the king's wife and you hate it? You know, like, but, you know, how can you sort of start these machinations behind the scene to in some way make a happy and powerful life for yourself? Yeah, so I wanted to really study. I didn't just want to be like, make it the king, but a woman. I wanted to look at, you know, the 16th century and like the complicated roles for women in that time and see, you know, how could we give the player the opportunity to just kind of fuck with this? You know what I mean? Yeah. So again, like, I don't want to really overstate that I've made some grand statement about it's a comedy mobile game. But I did kind of try to play with that a little bit and ask players to think about different centers of power within this kind of ecosystem. I don't know how successful I've been at that. I guess like the reception will tell. Yeah. But I tried.
Nice. Oh, and I wanted to add, and you can't ask a question now. I'm going to finish my other question.
All right.
Because now you brought up Game of Thrones. Who is your favorite Game of Thrones person?
I love my Queen Cersei.
Cersei.
All right, she's the worst person, but like, I can't say that in that circumstance, I wouldn't have been desperate as well. Like, diminished, humiliated, denied, degraded. Like, you got to use what you've got. And if all you've got is freaking bitterness and aggression and revenge fantasy, girl, get it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think she's a good person. I would not like to see her in charge of all those poor people in the Game of Thrones kingdom. But I have, you know, like, she's an awful character in a way that I really appreciate. And this does tie into what I was talking about with Reigns, because there's definitely, like, you know, we talk about feminist games and like, let's have women characters in here that we can be inspired by and relate to. And there's like a massive shortfall of that in games. So like, you know, I'm all here for that being brought in. But I am alongside that interested in, like, so look at all the like guy video game hitmen and murderers and like buff guys who are sad their wife dies and then they want to kill everyone and they're like, you know, drinking and going to strip clubs. I feel like we deserve at least a couple women who are awful people. I feel like for true equality to take place, we have to have like sleazy, shitty, power hungry and like, you know, substance-addled characters be our women protagonists as well. And like, again, that's not the whole picture. You know, it takes all kinds. But there was definitely, you know, I'm not, I'm not easily sold on like the badass turtleneck woman. So yeah, I love Cersei as a figure in entertainment and not a model for real life. how women, I'm definitely, you know, I don't support the way she treats other women in her, you know, she's not a real person. but yeah, like she's my favorite Game of Thrones character because I'm like, yes. Here's a desperate woman who's in trouble, who's acting badly, who's a hot mess, who does everything wrong, just like all the dudes on this show. So yep. I'm into that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a show about horrible people desperately trying to seize power. I don't want all the women to be nice and inspiring, you know?
Yeah, it's nice to see that, like, breadth of expressive ways of getting your way and figuring your way through it. Definitely makes sense.
So subconsciously, I would like to say that I think that Her Majesty in Reigns has some Cersei in her, because there are some very Cersei-like answers or opportunities or choices that you can make that lead to some very, very interesting results.
I'm so happy that you have already, like, I feel like you, like, you must not have had that much time to play it. So I feel like you opened it up and went straight to that zone and like started fucking with everybody immediately.
Maybe. I will neither confirm nor deny said question.
Yeah, that might have just been what you were trying to get out of that experience. Other people might find something different.
Maybe.
Well, you're out here hacking the game. Out here hacking the game.
There you go.
Right.
Or you're playing it correctly.
Exactly. Exactly. Fucking A right.
Thank you.
So, I mean, all that to say that I have been playing the shit out of the game.
You have?
Yes. Since,
I was not prepared for that. You'd actually seen a lot of it.
So I, my Zodiac circle is half full.
Uh-huh.
So I've been
because
doing
seven reigns now. So 12 reigns is a full trip around the Zodiac.
Probably 8 or 10.
Almost there then. It's almost been a Zodiac cycle that you have been clean.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you very much.
Well done.
I'd be working it out. I'm in touch with my inner queen.
But you're liking it though.
Oh, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I really loved Reigns when I discovered it. It was exactly what I was looking for in a mobile game, where it was easy to pick up. You can put it down. If, you know, something comes up, you can put it down and come right back and not miss a beat. It was repetitive in the best way repetitive things can be repetitive, and not in a way like some of the other mobile games that I have, where I just kind of check in and I play through it just because I need to do my daily check-in or what have you. Mm-hmm. There were, you know, every single time I played, it was the same, but so very different. And Reigns Her Majesty, because it's not Reigns 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I would be flattered to have an Electric Boogaloo attack to my first major league.
All right. It's Electric Boogaloo then.
We have to define what a Boogaloo is, though. What exactly is a Boogaloo?
Defies definition.
It does defy definition. It is like an Electric Boogaloo, or a Boogaloo in general, is like
Toe Jam and Earl 2 level weird. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. All right. I was gonna say it's like a Cicero the game.
Cicero and Earl 2.
There you go.
There's so many wrong things about that.
Adult Swim.
Right. Yeah, I know. Adult Swim. I hope they're listening right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Let them have their Electric. Yeah,
shout out to Jackie Collins. I hope you're watching.
So see, I'm gonna pull the Trump card. Ha ha. hey, sometimes I'm funny.
Yeah. You're always
let me have that moment.
Yeah.
I adore you, Lee. One day
we will be back. I don't know. We're gonna go. We're gonna go for some drinks one of these days. It's gonna happen.
But I'm gonna pull that card and steal a question that C was gonna ask before we started, which is, how glad are you to not be living here anymore?
Wow. Okay. So that's actually a complicated question because my process. So, you know, I married, like, you know.
Mazel tov, by the way.
Thank you. I got my visa through marriage to, like, you know, a decently well-off white dude in London. You know, I also have a job, like, you know, and it was hard. And there were, you know, errors, and it took months. I had to be away from my partner and the home that I had made over there for a good 2.5 months while they sorted through their bureaucracy.
Oh, wow.
And, like, not to be a downer, but at each stage, it was shocking and humbling to realize how hard it truly is to move country. And, like, what if we had had children? What if I have a portable career. I can totally, you know, come here for a bunch of time and work from home at every stage. So yes, I feel enormously, I'm super glad to move country. I love England. You know, America is a place that worries and scares me. And I feel really lucky to have been able to move away. But at every juncture of that incredibly stressful, expensive, bureaucratic, they have, like in America, they obscure, they, you know, they obscure this information from people. Again, lucky English was my first language. Lucky we could afford it. Lucky we don't have kids. Lucky, you know, like, so yes, I'm super glad to have moved country, but the whole thing only kind of horrified and depressed me even more, as it really, you know, in America, no matter where you're from, you definitely grow up hearing the narrative of, like, okay, yeah, we're cool with immigrants if they apply the right way. We have a, you know, we have a system for them to do this. And, you know, if only they do it the right way, it's all going to work out.
and it doesn't, because that was my job for a while.
Yeah, like, honestly, you know, yes, I love my husband. I'm super grateful that I could move to England to be with him. You know, I feel really lucky to have the opportunity to move because almost no one ever fucking gets it. It's not a thing that you can just fucking do. Like, excuse me, is it okay to curse on the stream?
Yeah, as much as you want.
I'm sorry. This was really like the process of applying to a visa was the most anxious and stressed out and broke that I've ever been. And all I could think of at every stage was, like, I'm one of the lucky ones. You know, I'm one of the privileged, protected, definitely going to happen ones. And coming to America is worse. Like, America is harder to emigrate to than any other country. And so in a way, I was going through all this basically during the election time. It was hard. Yeah, it was hard and it sucked and I hate it. You know, I found it really stressful to be away from him and wondering about, you know, were they even going to allow it? What if something goes wrong? What am I going to do for another 2 months if they reset my application due to a computer error, blah, blah, blah. But I'm glad in a sense that I had to go through it at that time because Americans are raised with, you know, as you know, a lot of wrong ideas about how the world works and who we are and what we can have. And I guess, like, you know, while the country was, you know, disputing and discussing its borders, I was really, I feel like I'm glad that I got to see how bullshit it really is. Like, it's yes. Yeah. I love my life in England. I'm grateful I don't have to live there anymore, but that's a short version of the story. The fact is it came with a lot of baggage that I'm still processing, about beliefs that I was raised with here, about how few people actually have the opportunity to ever move country in their life for any reason. Honestly, now, I don't mean to get heavy, but, like, you know, I feel really lucky, but I've also gotten really depressed. That's a huge topic. I feel scared when I'm in America. I don't feel as safe here as I do anywhere else. But I also feel like I've kind of given away my chance to have a say because I was in the 1% of people who could move, and I did it, you know? So I'm definitely, I cry a lot in England watching the news. I'm really right now trying to figure out, you know, my relationship to the future of the country, like whether there's anything I, you know, you have survived. There's a lot of survivor's guilt, I guess, you know, like there's no, you're American. There's no good way to feel right now, no matter where you are, you know?
So, so an interesting thing that you said is that you, you know, you picked up a lot of things while you were in England. One of the things is, putting yous in words that don't belong, and exchanging Z's for S's, and saying phrases like move country, because yeah, so you know, as you go into the back of the queue, but
my vocabulary is just this incredibly weird word salad now. Like, you know, there's like sometimes people in England are like, "What are you saying?" In New York now, my friends that I used to get on with are like, "What are you saying?" So it's like,
right? Yeah, you're kind of caught in between. Yeah. You're like a person with the same language without a language.
Yeah. I mean, story of my whole life anyway. I've always belonged to many different spaces without being able to own any of them. Yeah. Like I'm not broken up. I'm not like suffering in this trip. So for the most part, I'm fortunate, but there have been some consequences to the transition, like me losing my sense of home. It's a lot of stuff.
So a serious but kind of lighthearted question, or at least a curious one, is what is the conversation in England about the shit show that is the United States political process? You know, obviously we are led in quotes by you know, Donald Trump. He's perfect. He's beautiful. Everything is wonderful. he is soon to be wearing, hopefully, the last suit he will ever wear, which is an orange one to match his face and body.
I wanted to go specifically to Rikers.
Oh, that would be awesome. Right before they close it, that would be fantastic.
I want him to be one of the last Rikers inmates. That would be really fucking awesome. Come up in here, Donald.
You know what the best part? The best part would be, all right, check this out. Peep the echo, y'all. Okay. The best part would be if he goes to Rikers and he has to sit in the cell that the five Central Park joggers had to occupy. Yo, how dope am I? Let's make that happen. Let's I'm gonna speak it into existence. I'm bringing speaking truth to power, y'all.
Speaking Black your wishes Chris. On the universe. You've got to
that's
speak
right.
your wishes to the universe. That is to
correct.
Answer it.
That is correct. Fuck yeah. But so you know, so the popular belief of Americans, of sensible Americans, is that our cousins to the east across the pond aren't as brash. They're a little more pragmatic. They're more thoughtful than we are.
They have a much older country than we are.
Absolutely.
Like, here's the thing. America's been a country for like 17, 18, 19, 20, like 300 years. It's like, we're having a national puberty right now.
Exactly.
And like England is an ancient old lady who's our landlady, who's like laughing at our business that we're getting into.
Let's look at it by comparatively speaking, you know, obviously the queen she's the regent of England.
The queen does not factor into the daily lives of average English people.
Right. No, of Brits at all. But she is a regent. She's old as dirt. No disrespect to the queen. I hope to live as long. And she's old as dirt.
Yeah, but she's also sitting on and wearing the entire amount of money that could save the NHS. So
exactly. Yeah. So, but she is, you know, she is prim and proper. She's posh. She's all of the things that you'd expect someone to lead.
An ancient British ideal. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. Whereas we are being led by a fifth grader.
So, okay,
Like, it's perfect.
Here's the thing. In England, they don't actually consider their situation to be that much different than ours. In both countries.
Interesting.
So in England, it's not the same racial climate, but I guess it is comparable because the British have a 1,000-year history of colonialism and conquering. And in those days, their world has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk. Their power has been lost. Now, you know, the refugee situation in Europe has triggered a tide of nationalism in the UK. Mm. So there is still So both of our countries have in common a fear of progress, a fear of integration, a fear of globalism. So Brexit was seen by English people to be representative of a tide of foreigner fear and nationalism that is going on in the country at the time. So I think for a lot of English people, they relate to what the U.S. is going through because we're also seeing this, like, we haven't seen this in a long time. What the fuck is this? For white people, at least, haven't seen it. A long time conservative backlash type thing. And so we're all kind of the English think that both of us have this tide in common of suddenly regressing into this old racist nationalist perspective. But they get to look at us and say, at least we don't have Donald Trump. But you know, the English people are also afraid. Brexit frightened the English to the exact same degree that the Trump election frightened us, because we also have a thing where it's like 50-50. We have young people who want to move forward, you know, in a globalist, diverse way. And then we have like scared ass, you know, racist conservatives who want to go back to how things were before. And so fundamentally, it's the same situation on the ground in both countries. We're just expressing it in a different manner as a result of the differences in our history. But most people in America, like when I meet most people in England, they don't assume that I'm a Trump supporter. They're like, oh God, like, so how do you feel about that? You know, so I think the English do consider themselves to be companions, which is why Theresa May was like, no, about the Britain First retweet. You know, like, I think they're both, even though England is a much smaller country and it has a different history, I think both nations are confronting this like buried sea of bullshit that we thought that neoliberalism had buried. You know what I mean? Mm. So yeah, they're not, I think the English see themselves as dealing with the same thing as us. They're not like looking at us being like, oh, fuck America. They're kind of like, oh, wow, the world is horrible right now for us. Yeah, so there's a lot of commonalities, actually. The English are afraid of the future of their country the same way that we are.
Interesting.
Mm. Okay, great. So we've had, you know, a couple of other devs that are sort of, you know, outside of the States, like specifically we've had Mike Bitho on a couple of times, and he's talked a little bit about the difference between like being sort of the underdog European developer versus the US. Uh-huh. Have you noticed some of those kind of differences, like your time being in the UK and like in like, you know, even in the tech space with your Guardian work, have you seen sort of some differences between how that stuff is like covered there versus how it's covered here?
I don't know. Like, so for straight up, I'm like acclimatized to it. Like I have an English perspective, whether I like it or not. So I don't know how objective I can be on this. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely different. There is a scene in the UK, but America has a bunch of fragmented scenes. There's an Austin scene and a New York scene, an LA scene, a San Fran scene. So we have a London scene, we have a Brighton scene, you know, we have an up north scene, we have a Berlin scene where a lot of UK devs have moved now. So one thing that I really love about living in London is the arts and the culture funding is so strong. So we have actually like a lot of museum oriented and we have a lot more arts events and a lot more talks and stuff. But also, okay, I'm probably going to alienate all my English friends right now, but they're asleep anyway. So right. England is such a small country that I wonder if they've got like kind of their dev culture is more insular. They talk to each other a lot. It's not as different as you'd think, but they definitely have their own thing going on. They don't think a lot about us. So
That's interesting, because I always wondered about, you know, how development looks for the kind of global community, and then how that reflects itself back into individuals' work, you know, because like a lot of times the stuff that we are seeing politically kind of bounce its way through people, comes out in their work. And I know that you talked about
it's all accidental. Like I'm not, I never felt like I was politically educated enough, or like, you know, like it's one thing to, you know, obviously I'm interested in social justice, but one thing I learned through 2014 and all that is that calling yourself an activist is a different series of tasks. And it's a different series of requirements. It's really hard to say. I've really lost my objectivity about the English dev industry, but I think they do have their own set of self-expression concerns and credibility concerns that don't always intersect with developers in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I hope I don't upset anyone by saying that.
No, I think that's super reasonable. Super reasonable. I want to bring it back to Reins really quick, because there's a thing that we touched upon that we didn't really dig into, and it's something that I'm always curious about as like the human experiment, right? Which is, you know, you talked about C getting to almost his full revolution in his astrology circle. That's something that I didn't think was going to be in this game, and find really interesting. Yeah, because it's a thing that I think a lot of folks either are really into when they talk about, you know, themselves and their sign and what attributes kind of have been historically and stereotypically kind of attached to your sign, and how it kind of plays itself out in this game. Do you subscribe to some of that stuff? Like, I've always been really interested to know, like, I'm kind of in my Virgo space where I'm like, yo, I'm a Virgo and I do Virgo shit. And Virgo,
I got a Mars in Virgo, so I do understand that my father is a Virgo. I'm super interested. I don't necessarily full on believe that astrology is real, but what I do believe is that we're in a time of unprecedented bullshit, upheaval, chaos, disempowerment, re-empowerment, and whatever systems of belief make you feel connected to community and make you feel better about your way of facing the world, I'm for that. So like, no, I don't think astrology is real, but I have found a lot of value in that community because, and this does tie back into Reins, because Reins is set in like a French Revolution inspired mid to late 16th century and onward. And I was really kind of interested in exploring how, nature, magic, goddesses, cults, things like that might have formed the core of resistance in a time like that. I've always been really interested in how, folklore, cults, magic, religious, indigenous beliefs, things like that shape the core of resistance. And that's so I wanted to really make, witchcraft and astrology prominent in Reins too, as a symbol of how, women have historically resisted by developing occult beliefs, folk beliefs, local beliefs, magic is actually about community and like intention and like a unified system of belief that allows you to, resist the authority of the land. And it has always been about that. So I did kind of put it in Reins for that reason. And, even though I wouldn't say that I'm a, religious practitioner or a sophisticated witch or a sophisticated astrologer, but I do participate in those communities from time to time, because right now they're forming a helpful cushion of community and resistance for me in an environment where everything I love has been taken over by bullshit. That's kind of what inspired the presence of astrology and magic in Reins, specifically as a form of folk resistance and feminist resistance. Again, it's a comedy mobile game. I don't want to suggest that I've communicated this in like a super deep way. But these are things that resonate for me in my life. And I thought, for the player who's like swiping in Reins day to day on her subway commute or whatever, like those might provide, briefly amusing touchstones or like points of entry into that folklore of resistance for women and anybody who's basically, not the dominant class right now.
I love that. That is amazing. I love that. That's so dope.
Like I said, like I really worry about, like, again, I really put it in like an entry level way. I'm not trying to, you know, there are a lot of sophisticated witches and astrologers and people who, you know, this is their space, and you know, they are more deserving practitioners than me. But this is just kind of like a lighthearted comedy nod to the role that their work plays in my life. I don't want to say like I'm adding anything to that dialogue, but more like paying tribute to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, like, while we've been talking, the community has been chatting away. And this is what I love about our community, because there's smart folks in the chat and they're asking great questions.
Mm-hmm.
And this one from Fabio Fogo. Hopefully I said that right.
It's a great name.
It is. I just hope, hopefully I didn't butcher it. But Fabio wanted to know, as you mentioned about being mobile to work, what is the workflow of developing games while being mobile, especially for the games that she worked on?
So I would say that working on Rain accounted for about 60% of my time for the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. And the rest of that was short fiction, world building, technology journalism. Like, I'm still doing my tech articles for, you know, I did the podcast for The Guardian this year as well. I do, like, I have a diverse array of things that I work on. And I would say, I mean, I don't know, it was three people. We would meet once a week. We would decide on our objectives for the next 7 days, and we would do them. And after a year, we really didn't, because it was an established system that was successful already. And, like, you know, it was kind of like a remix rather than starting from scratch. So yeah, it was really just, you know, us meeting frequently and then me deciding how to slot our objectives into my workflow for that week.
So 2017, Lee, has been, I don't know how much of the gaming space you've involved yourself in, especially since you were busy creating one yourself. But 2017 has probably been the most heralded or talked about year in gaming since 2007.
Every year has just, like, sucked. An amazing year.
Right, right.
And then there's also the same number of people who are like, what the fuck even came out this year? It sucked. There was some just Nintendo games. There was Zelda, and that was it. Like, every year we do this. Like,
So have you experienced any of the games of this year?
Okay, wow. I really conscientiously tried this year to give myself the gift of not to be all up in the gaming world. Like, for the first time in 10 years, I was like, I don't care, I'm not going to do it. But, you know, I still find, you know, I played Breath of the Wild. I played Persona 5. I don't know what's wrong with everybody. Did they not play Persona 4?
Actually, I didn't.
See, you need to play. Anybody who loves Persona 5 just did not play Persona 4 Golden. That's all there is to it. Yeah, I played those two. I played some independent games, all kinds of small little things. My husband recently did a video review of this game called The Norwood Suite, and I really agreed with his views on that. I was really into that. I still like weird, like, off-world style games and, like, 1980s and 1990s games that I do on my emulator. But no, this year I actively endeavored to not get involved in games for any reason other than sheer desire. And I ended up playing like two or three games. Nice. Maybe probably more than that, but, you know, you don't, if right. you're not trying to remember it, and if you don't need to write about it, you don't, you know, it's
right.
What if games are like a good thing to do for fun? And
what? I mean,
when did that happen?
right.
Yeah. Like, what if you could just, like, play it and be like, okay, I did that at the end. I don't have to say anything. Uh-huh. Yeah. I just try. Yeah. No, I don't have a lot to say about the year in games because I conscientiously checked out. And that's not out of disrespect for any of the work that was being done. It was just, I needed a self-care year.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I really needed to show myself that I didn't need to stay only in this
mm-hmm.
world, you know. So, I had a great year. I, you know, I started working out in the time that I normally would have spent, like, trying to play Steam games. And I feel great. So.
Awesome.
I mean, I love games, don't get me wrong, but I hope that people can understand that, like, my particular trajectory through the field has been fraught, and, like, I have some complicated feelings. Sometimes I just need some space from time to time, so during the time that I was taking space, I might have accidentally written a narrative design to a video game, but it was an accident. Today, this year, I just tried to be, like, a mainstream bro. Normal gamer.
Oh, so you played a shit ton of Madden.
Right. A shit ton of Madden and lots of zombies, yo.
So I've never actually played Madden, but back in the day, the Madden team used to be one of my favorite development teams to interview because their studies on the physiology of sports in the human body were so deep. Oh, the Madden team is low-key one of the most fascinating teams in game development, how they have Yeah, I loved talking to them because it was just the perfect for an interviewer who wrote for developers, which that's what I did for most of my life. Like, it was the coolest possible example of how do you take a deep bench of wisdom, build on it. Like, you know, they're just, the Madden team is just this whole nother thing. And even though I don't understand how football is played and I've never played a Madden game, I really respect the work they do on the development side, studying bodies, studying sports, trying to build on the player participation in that live sport around the world. Like, it's some cool stuff that they do for sure. I have a lot of respect for them.
That's super dope.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you this question. So obviously you're in that situation where, you know, Reigns was sort of a big surprise hit, right? It was, you know, Apple's game of the year. It got a lot of positive, you know, buzz, obviously. So now you're at that point where there's all these expectations, right? And you've also been at the point, I'm sure, in your journalism career, both, you know, on the tech or the gaming side, where you've, you know, had to review something where you've almost had to inevitably compare it to what came like before. Is there anything that you take from your time as a journalist being in that position that you think about when you're developing a game that's, you know, the follow-up to one of the, you know, top mobile games of last year?
Absolutely. So for one thing, even when I was a reviewer, I thought the idea that a sequel should be taken as if it existed in a vacuum was bullshit. Of course, you're serving a similar fan base. You've got a core group of people who are waiting on the follow-up. The developer's task is to evolve the mechanics that already existed. You know what I mean? Like, I always thought that the job of a sequel was to build on an original in explicit ways. And that also might mean it becomes something different, you know, and it might not please all the original fans. And, you know, I'm prepared for that here. When I was making this game, to be honest, I really didn't think a lot about my, like, journalism past. I definitely did bring my critical sensibilities to the project. Like, what I think is good is, you know, or what I thought I should do was rooted in my ideas of what I thought was good. But, you know, we definitely did approach, there is to some extent a pragmatic way that you can approach a sequel. Like, you know, here's what people loved, here's what they didn't love, here's what we were proud of, here's what we thought needed work, and here's what we would need to add to make a follow-up that we would all be proud of. You know what I mean? So yeah, like, there's definitely a rule set that you can follow. There's going to be some people who are like huge Reigns fans that evaluate it in light of that. And there's definitely going to be some people who play this one first. Like, I don't know. You know, right. I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Lee, we're about to almost, time has flown.
It's
unreasonable how fast the time has already gone. And that means that, one, you have to come back again real soon.
I can't believe you let me talk like this.
We would love to have you talk as much as you want, anytime you want. You let us know when you're free and you can have a spot. You got a spot.
I'm so nervous about it launching. Like, y'all are the first people that, like, I've known. You know, like, you're my first friends that are interviewing me about this. So, like, it's my, it'll be my first time. I spent 10 years being very opinionated about other people's games. So it might be coming back now. My one dream is that it creates some smiles for people. That's it.
Well, I know it already did with amongst our crew.
Exactly. That's all I want to hear. Thank you. My last question for you.
Mm-hmm. And this is not going to be one of those like out of nowhere questions, but it's
okay.
Because when I think about games from people who I care about who have made really cool stuff, I always think about the next thing, and it's super early to think about that. But if you were to have your druthers, and you were to be tasked with making Reigns 3.
Oh my god. It would be Game of Thrones Reigns, like more. Sweet. Yeah. I would definitely double down on a lot of Reigns was me learning to write within the system. And obviously if you do something the first time, if you had it to do over again, it would be better. So I definitely think a lot about like how much more of a complicated storytelling, like realistic, gritty ass narrative system could I come up with if I were given it to do again. I'm sure that if there's a Reigns 3, you know, it's likely, you know, it's possible to work with someone different than me. I don't know the future. I can't speak to the future of the franchise, but yeah, like, you know, I hope I can keep working on projects that let me, you know, think and write in narrative design terms while expressing some of my humor and my politics. I think the Reigns engine would work really good in a Game of Thrones context. But for me personally, there's some other projects that I'm working on that are narrative oriented. And I hope for more of those.
Word.
Yeah.
So, you know, that means, you know, you have to come on our show and break those to people and let people know.
Absolutely. Guaranteed. Thank you so much. This made me feel so, you know, I've been so anxious about this. This is actually a big shift for me. It's this is not something that I know what to expect from. So to have the support and interest from, you know, my friends, my colleagues, people that I spoke to from before now has meant like a lot to me. So thank you so much for your interest and for having me on.
Of course. Of course. We are always always happy to have you here with us and to share your wonderful work that you do in this space, in all the spaces that you occupy. Here's a part of game development that everyone who is semi-new to game development hates, is when you get to plug your shit. So let everybody at home know where they can find Reigns, where they can snag it, when it drops, and all that good stuff.
Modular kingdom management and story-based game Reigns Her Majesty will be available December 7th on Steam, Google Play, and the App Store.
Nice.
Oh, shit.
Look at that. Look at that.
Me and I trained Lee Alexander.
Whoa, that is like, this is so weird.
For a price point of... the low price of...
You know, I think it's $2.99.
For the low price of $2.99, Reigns Her Majesty.
I hope that our PR colleagues are not listening, because I'm not good at this. I'm not good.
That's all right.
This.
I saved it for you.
It's okay. It's all good.
$2.99. Your support and interest would be much appreciated.
That is perfect. Perfect. Before we get up out of here, where else can they find your writing talents on the internet?
So I usually just kind of post my latest articles on my Twitter, which is @LeeAlexander. But on my Medium page, @LeeAlexander, it's a repository of a lot of the journalism I'm doing for outlets that use Medium as a platform. I'm doing a series for Medium called IO about internet life. And I'm doing some journalism for an awesome site called How We Get to Next. The Guardian podcast is still up. If you haven't heard it before, I produced a season of that. A lot of my old video game writing is at thealexander.net.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Okay. See, we're about to get up out of here. Let everybody know
what you want. Media what business. You want, son?
Do your job. Do your job. Do your social media business job.
One more thing before C does his job.
Okay.
He's probably not going to do his job anyway.
Wow. A shade.
Lee, actually share this out that the, and I don't know if it's still on sale, but the All Four collection was on sale.
Oh, yes. I forgot I should have mentioned it. Yes. On the, so the Offworld collection, which Laura Hudson developed in response to our digital curation, is for sale on the Campo Santo store. It's 35% off for Christmas. So if you like beautiful picture books full of games journalism that may have one of our team in the bylines, right? So yes. Oh my God, that's right. Ah, yeah, there's two of us. Ah, yeah. So if you want to buy a book that has three of the people on this stream in it, Offworld Collection, 35% off, camposanto.com. Sorry, I'm like, I'm not really good at ever. This.
So good.
It's okay.
You are great. So good. It's so I'm good. So,
like, I was so nervous for today. Oh, my God.
Oh, you're just hanging out with friends.
It's I know, but that yeah. almost stuff. Makes it worse because I'm comfortable with you. That means I might say something dumb.
Oh, don't worry. Like, don't worry.
Trust me. We've all said dumb shit.
Not me. I've never said dumb shit. Not
I've me. Got 200 episodes of dumb shit.
I've got a whole life of dumb shit. Thank you for supporting me like this.
Well, before we do our social media business, I've always wanted to do this because Lee, you are amazing, and I've always wanted to like thank you, even though we've never met face to face, for giving me a chance to write for Offworld.
It was like you were when I started originating the idea for the site. You were one of the first people I thought of, and that's the truth because you were getting yourself out Aww. There. You had a lot to say. You know, you were one of my first choices anyway. Like in a way, the like concept for the site came from the desire to publish writers like you. So it was really a no-brainer. Thank you for, you know, enriching, you know, thank you were the one that contributed, you know, you were the, you know, it was the voices of the people that we invited that created Offworld. So thank you.
Shit, that almost made thank me you. Cry. We need to get off
yeah.
this. That was, that damn, that hit me in my heart.
Yes.
That was great.
Aww. This group that was hugs great. Time, that's what
I know. Oh, really though, like really, it's really, you know, all we, it's a, this is the upsetting thing about Offworld, actually, is that it was way too easy to find people that we wanted to publish that had not been getting their dues elsewhere for whatever. You know, it's like they say, like, oh, we just don't know anyone of that demographic who can. No, like I knew a million people. It's easy. You know, and that was. In a way, that's like, again, that's one of the things, obviously I'm proud of Offworld and I'm grateful for all the hard work Laura did to bring the book to life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm so proud of all the writers, but it's not something that I feel that, yes, I'm proud of it, but you know, like it, the reason it was important was the platform that other people took advantage of when we invited them. So yeah, like it was because of you. So thank you more than the other way around.
Oh,
look at that. She took your thank you and was like, whatever with your thank you, son. Thank you back at you.
What? What? Why you gotta ruin a beautiful moment, Cicero?
Yeah, you really did ruin it.
I mean, that's what I come on. That why is, are you gonna true. Ask me a question about me being me? Why am I gonna be me?
You on. Can rein that shit in for one day.
Can you be one. You and do the social media business, please?
Maybe. All right. Social media business is as follows. Okay. You want to follow us? Go to any social media platform and put in the word Spawn on Me. You can find us there. If you want to follow us individually, check the bylines. All of our information is right there. If you are in podcast land and you are listening to this podcast, you can catch us on your favorite podcatcher. And if it is a place where you can subscribe, please do so. Obviously, if it's a place where you can rate and review, please also do that. It really, really helps us out. And of course, tell your friends. That'd be grateful, or we'll be grateful. That'd be great to do so. Check us out, spawnon.me or esn.fm/spawnonme. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/spawnonme, where you can leave us as little as a dollar a month.
Or more if you can. Come on.
Right. Or more if you can. Absolutely. And you hear great things such as Spawn on Me After Dark and Bukrago Beltway, which is coming very soon.
Ooh, Lee, if you ever want to talk about politics with us, That is a great show to ooh, that would
be the show.
I'm very political, but the more politically educated I get, the less authoritative I feel to speak on things. So
That's even better. That's even better.
Yeah, I would love to, but you know, I'm just asshole off the street person. I'm not like an academic.
The invitation's always out there.
Absolutely. And again, Lee, thank you so much. And you always have a seat at the table with us.
Thank you. Like, honestly, like, I've been going through so many feelings, you know, releasing my first game after the support and the friendship and knowing you guys means so much. Thank you.
Word. Awesome. Word.
It's been our pleasure.
We're going to get up out of here. Thank you so much, everybody at home. Thank you, everyone on podcast land. Thank you, everyone. Go buy Reigns. Go buy it. Buy more copies. Put it in your pocket.
Thank you.
Put it on
buy another phone and get another phone and get.
Or you can get it on Steam. You can get it on Steam as well. If your phone is broken because you dropped it in the dance hall like I did, you can just get it on Steam.
It's true. It's one of those things where you got to, you know, buy it for everybody to know. All right, everybody. We're getting up out of here.
Thank you.
Much love. Peace out.
Much love. Thanks, guys.